medically it's not going to happen. And he's been rejected like 5 or 6 times. And then there's this opportunity of this kind of this new thing that's been created, this idea of creating a super soldier. And so he's sent off to boot camp along with all the other kind of prospective soldiers as they try and work out whether he has really got what it takes. Now, the army personnel think kind of, no, he's just a scrawny little kid. He's going to be absolutely no good on the battlefield. But there's this scientist who's saying, no, I think he's the kind of person we want for this experiment. And there's this scene where they've been doing their exercise and that sort of thing, and kind of one of the superior officers shows up, Tommy Lee Jones, comes along, and he's basically telling this scientist, you don't know what you're talking about. You want someone to go into battle. You want, and he references this guy and that guy who are built like brick houses and as hard as nails and rough and ready and all that. He said, those are the kind of people you want. But the scientist says, no, this guy, this Steve Rogers, he's what we're looking for. And Tommy Lee Jones' character says, no, I'll prove it to you. He's going to be no good in a situation when really, you know, the rubber hits the road, when he's really got to show his mettle. And so he pulls this grenade out of this box, pulls the pin out and throws it and shouts, kind of, duck, get out of the way or whatever. And all the soldiers dive for cover, except for Steve Rogers, who dives in on top of the grenade, protecting everyone else around him. Now, as it turns out, it's a dud, or it's a blank or whatever. But in that moment, they realize that however much physically he may not appear up to much, actually his character, what's inside, is someone who will give everything he's got, who is committed to protecting and serving those around him. He wants to stand by them, you know, whatever may come upon him, whereas all the kind of guys built like brick houses and that sort of stuff ran for cover and got out of the way as quick as possible. It's that whole idea of what does it mean to refuse to settle? And what does it mean for us as believers to say, actually, no, I'm going to give everything I've got. I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to alter the course that I believe God has put me on and what it means to live for him wherever I find myself. If you were here last week at either the 8:45 or the 5 p.m. meeting, you'll have heard Mark. He was looking at Luke 5. 1 to 11, and the calling of the first disciples. And the whole theme of what it means to take the plunge, if you will, and step out in faith as we seek to share the good news of Jesus Christ. And then this morning, if you were with us at either of our 2 morning meetings, Stuart Phillips spoke on Luke 12 and the parable of the rich fool. And this whole idea of how a challenge before us to be generous. He used the phrase he talked about, being pathologically generous. Something that is so innate within us that we can't help but be generous people. Can't help but be a generous church. And as I sat there this morning listening to Stuart, I found it really interesting that both what Mark shared last week and I think some of what Stuart was sharing this morning really kind of come together in the passage that I prepared for this evening and want us to reflect upon briefly. Now, it comes from Matthew 9, verses 35 to 38, a passage, and you might kind of go, oh, well, it's harvest, so it's an obvious one to choose, or it's maybe one you've heard before. Matthew 9, verses 35 to 38 says, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, the harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. As I read that through initially, I get kind of stuck on the first verse, because Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in the synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. It's like one verse, but there's just tons going on in it. I'd love to know, well, which towns, which villages? Who are the people? Obviously, we read throughout the Gospels the accounts of Jesus meeting people and powerfully encountering them and changing their lives. But as I read that verse, I was like, I want to know more. You know, what was the, you know, proclaiming the good news? What words did he use? What message was it that he shared? When he talks about healing every disease and sickness, well, what was some of it? How can we learn from that? How can we be encouraged by it? But we see what he's doing here as he goes out. He's meeting people's needs physically and spiritually, or spiritually and physically, whichever way you want to look at it. He's meeting people where they're at and addressing the needs that they face, again, from both a physical and a spiritual dimension. And I want us just to reflect on this passage now, because I think it brings some questions that maybe we need to be considering. As those who are on the ground, if you will, for God, how are we seeking to meet the needs of people physically and spiritually? What does it mean for us? Thinking maybe back to some of what Mark shared last week or Stuart was sharing this morning. What does it actually mean when God's Holy Spirit is working in us? What are we hoping to see? What is it we're expecting to see? Are we expecting to see anything, or are we just kind of going from one week to the next and, well, I'm Christian, I'm a believer, that's enough, and I'm in these places, but I'm not really going to see any difference? Or are we going, well, no, actually, I believe God's going to use me and God's going to move through me, and I'm going to see things happen and lives transformed that are just going to blow my mind when I actually stop and think about it? I want us to look particularly at the last verse in this passage. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Initially, it's the fact that we're to ask the Lord of the harvest to send workers. That's what Jesus says in this verse. And I believe it raises that question of how willing am I to step into all that God is setting before me? There's a great kind of thing often, you know, when you're looking for volunteers, not just in church, but you know, in different gatherings, and you're looking for volunteers. And the thing you can guarantee in that moment is people will nominate other people. You know, if I were to say here, I want to volunteer for an exercise, I'm guaranteed that there'd be people who would go, well, actually, yeah, see, you know, yeah, the person sitting next to me would love to do it. Or that person over there would be great at this. And we're really up for kind of going, well, actually, I can always think of someone else who this really applies to. And I think there's a bit of that with this verse here sometimes when we read this challenge to ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers. Well, obviously, it's meaning that we need to be asking for other people to go out. So I think part of the challenge actually is recognizing the call that is upon each of us. We know Jesus. If we're seeking to live for him, actually, how are we going to step up? How are we going to move forward? How are we going to respond to the powerful challenge that it is to play our part as believers? I've been reading a book recently with the subtitle, Save Nothing for the Next Life. Save Nothing for the Next Life. And in it, the kind of the narrative of Elijah and Elisha, their interactions and the transition between these two prophets. You can read about it in the book of 1 Kings and follow him. And in many ways, there's different kind of classic pictures you might, or stories we might be familiar with. But there's also lots of little bits that kind of as often is woven throughout that you don't necessarily notice. And one of the things that the writer of this book, when he was talking about Elijah and Elisha, he references the calling of Elisha. So Elijah comes first, Elisha comes second. Okay, and Elijah comes along, and in 1 Kings 19, he comes to Elisha. And it says, so Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye, he said, and then I will come with you. Go back, Elijah replied. What have I done to you? So Elisha left him, went back, took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out to follow Elijah and became his servant. He literally takes his livelihood, what he's doing, and sets fire to it. Here's a guy who at one moment is plowing in this field, and shortly after is headed off down the road. And it's not that he can kind of change his mind in half an hour and kind of just subtly slip back in and carry on where he left off halfway through a field. That part of his life has ended. And he's moved on into something new, into the calling that has been set before him. And Mark shared, looking at Luke 5 last week and the calling of the first disciples, we don't read about any great Viking-style flaming flotilla being set up by Peter and the other fishermen. Jesus says, come and follow me. And they go, yes, but hold on a second, we just need to torch all our boats and that sort of thing. But at the same time, they walked away from their livelihood. they walked away from what had gone on before. And I don't think that the kind of the cut and thrust business society that we have these days is something new. I imagine it would have been the case back then that there would have been other fishermen who've gone, great, one less boat for us to worry about, one less group of people pulling fish out of this sea. We've now got a little bit more of the market. Because they turned away from it and moved on. The thing is, the ministry and the model that Jesus sets before us, and for those who want to follow him, is not a hit and miss kind of setup. Take it or leave it, or when it fits, that's great, but the rest of the time, don't really worry about it. It's about deciding to follow Jesus and going, I'm going to try and live for you every day of my life from this day onwards. Some days I'll be really rubbish at it, and then some days I'll be even worse than rubbish at it, and some days I won't even want to use the word rubbish in how rubbish I am at it. But every day saying, yes, this is the path that I want to walk. This is the direction that I'm heading in. This is the heart that I want to live with. How am I going to be sold out in my decision to follow you? Back in the summer when a group of us in church went to the gathering, the men's kind of festival with over 2,000 men in a field near Swindon, there was an interview. They do interviews throughout the weekend, but there was an interview on the last morning with a guy called Simon Thomas. And he's now a presenter on Sky Sports, but he was a Blue Peter presenter kind of initially. That was his big break into the world of TV. And they interviewed him about what it means, what it's like to be a Christian in the public eye and some of the challenges and that sort of thing. But the thing that really stuck with me and watching it back, when you can download it and that sort of thing, he used this phrase about how sometimes we can go through life as Christians. We can go through life with the handbrake half on. In the same way, he said, you know, you can drive a car with the handbrake kind of not fully off. It might make a weird sound, and it might be slightly slower, and it might not do your car much good. But you can get away with it. And he was saying the challenge is, and the thing he'd really been kind of convicted of over the weekend, he was sharing, was actually that challenge. Actually, he needed to take the handbrake fully off and fully engage in the call to follow Jesus and the call that had been set before him and the role that he was playing. And it wasn't about thinking what other people said he should be doing or what other people kind of thought how he should be acting. But actually, no, it was about him hearing the call from God and responding to it and what it meant for him in his situation working in the media. And so when we think about the challenge of being all that God calls us to be as part of those workers sent in to the harvest field, I'd want to ask the question, well, where do we find ourselves? For you guys who are at Claverham, that's your harvest field. That's where God has placed you. Now, you might kind of go, I didn't have a choice in that because I kind of have to go. And if I don't go, I get detentions and all stuff like that. But that's where God's placed you. That's the field that is before you. And I believe it's about you saying, okay, God, how are you going to use me here? Which, trust me, having been at Claverham as a student is a really scary thing to ask. But I believe it's one of the most exciting things we can ask as well. Maybe if you work here, whatever that looks like, whether you work in an office, whether you work, it takes you all over the place, whether you work with a few people or whether you see lots of different people. So going, that's the harvest field that God's placed you in. How are you going to recognize that? How are you going to take hold of that? How are you going to see the potential that is before you? One of the interesting things that Simon Thomas said was when he was on Blue Peter, people used to send him WWJD bands. What would Jesus do? Because they'd write these letters and said, it'd be great for you to wear one of these when you're doing a make. And then everyone would see that and they'd know you're a Christian. And he said, that's not what it's about. It's about him living the life of a believer in that environment. And in the same way for you at your work, it doesn't mean that tomorrow morning you need to stand on the desk in your office and say, can I just have everyone's attention, please, for a moment? I just want to tell you about Jesus before we get down to files and all that sort of thing, answering phone calls. It's not about that. But it's about recognizing the harvest field that God has placed you. If you spend your time maybe in kind of seeing family or friends, or just as you're going about your life, actually going, well, this is the community that is part of your harvest field. These are the people that are part of your harvest field. And again, how are we going to take hold of that? How am I going to actually grapple with the fact, well, the lady who moved in next door to us up the road, well, she's part of our harvest field. And how are we actually going to recognize that? Not that we're going to suddenly go around on the way up here and let's just actually bash her over the head with the Bible, because that's what I should do. But seeking God, saying, how are you going to use me in this place? How are we willing to step into all that God is setting before us? But alongside that, when we look at this verse, there's also, I think, that challenge to us to remember that it says, the harvest field, well, whose was it actually? Let's think about that for a moment. If you read that verse, it says, ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Something that, I don't know when you find, you maybe you look at a verse or you hear a story from the Bible and it just hits you afresh. It hits you in a different way. It just jumps out at you. And as I've been reading this through over the last week or so, those three letters, that word, just had never quite hit me in the same way. Jesus is saying, ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field. And I think it's that reminder that actually recognizing God is the one who is on the job. God is the one who calls us, who empowers us, who fills us with his spirit and gives us the ability, the gifts, the talents to make a difference for him. And he's the one who sends us out to live our lives to make a difference wherever we find ourselves. If you will, God is the one who created the field. He's the one who planted the crops. He's the one who crafted every element within it. But again, I wonder whether sometimes we forget that. I wonder sometimes we miss the fact that actually, you know, God has gone before us. And God is in the midst of all that we're facing. And God can pick up the pieces afterwards if need be. But all of it is his harvest field. And he's longing for us to step up and be a part of his mission into it. Now, we need to recognize that the life isn't easy. That we're entering into a hostile world. Let's go back to thinking about whether we're, you know, at Claverham or at work or just out and about. We have relative freedom here in this country to be able, as we are gathering tonight, to, you know, gather and sing and look at the Bible and all those sort of things. But actually, to go out and suddenly start maybe even letting people know what we believe may not always be met with kind of, that's great, lovely. I remember the first time we were talking with Ewan and Evie and Ella a few days ago, the first time my friends discovered I was a Christian when I was at secondary school. It was on a Saturday night, they saw me out as part of an event that we were involved in as a church. I can remember the Monday, I can still picture where I was, and that break time was not pleasant, because we live in a hostile world. But it's remembering the fact that it's hostile because the enemy is kicking around. It's not hostile because he has any real power. It's not hostile because he can actually win. It's hostile because he's kicking around, seeking to cause trouble, and will do everything he can to undermine us, to make it tough for us, to put barriers in our way, and to make us think, well, actually, this is not really worth it, and I'd really rather give up and just go home. It's remembering that the harvest field is God's. He's the one who calls us into it. He's the one who will go with us. He's the one who will make a difference, hopefully, in and through us, and into the lives of those that we meet and live amongst. I think it's about ensuring and asking that question, that how am I going to change my outlook as I go through life? And it's a question that I've been asking myself, you know, thinking about this. How am I going to make sure that my head is in the game for what I believe God is setting before me each day I get up, each step that I take? And how am I going to ensure that my mindset is in the right place to remember that it's not actually about me, it's about God, because he's the one who is over all of it. And by his grace, he's choosing to use me and invite me to be a part of that in the same way that he does with every single one of us. Dr. Seuss, back in 1959, wrote the story Happy Birthday to You. And in it, there's a line, "Today you are you. That is truer than true. There is no one alive who is youer than you." I believe God wants to do the most magnificent and amazing things in and through us. I believe he wants to do the most amazing and magnificent things in and through me. I believe he wants to do the most amazing and magnificent things in and through you. The thing is, though, we could settle and go, it's too tough, or it's too dangerous, or it might all just blow up in our faces. Or we could say, no, I want to enter that harvest field. I want to see God's kingdom come here. I want to really grapple with what it means for me to share my faith, to tell people what I believe and why I believe. To actually think, what does it mean to live a life of generosity in such a way that people can't help but stop and see the difference because of my desire to positively impact them and their situation? How will we step up and be all that God is calling each of us to be in the lives that we live? Let's pray. God, I want to thank you for the truth of your word, and I pray that the things that come from it, that are from you, will really settle deep in our hearts, Lord, tonight. I pray that the challenge that you set before each of us to know you and to live for you and to go out into this world, however far that may be, whether that's just down the street or whether that's to the other side of it, Lord, many miles from here, but wherever it is, that you'll help us to respond to the things that you've set before us. I pray that you will help us to grapple with the need to share our faith, the need to live lives that demonstrate our faith. For those of us, maybe, Lord, who are terrified at the thought of that, or maybe just unsure as to how it actually works out, I pray that you will give us the strength to share that with one another, to stand side by side, so we can support each other as we move forward, but also so we can celebrate the fact of you responding to our prayers and you answering our calls and you delivering in the most amazing ways, Lord. For your glory we ask it, Lord.